This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao, in for Frank Stachow. Every spring and summer, reports about snake sightings and snake bites start popping up in North Carolina. You're spending more time outdoors in the warmer weather, which means you're more likely to run into a snake. The big names are pretty well known, like copperheads and rat snakes, but there are almost 40 different species of snakes in the state. In most regions of North Carolina, there are probably 20 species of snake around you in any given area, and more than that if you're in the coastal plains. Jeff Bean is a herpetologist. He's the collections manager for herpetology for the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences, and he joins me now. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you.
So snakes, they're something that many of us probably run as far away from as possible when we can, but as a young kid, you've actually been really drawn toward them. Tell me about how this love for snakes began for you.
Well, I've always been interested in anything that was alive. I think my fascination with snakes began because people around me had so much fear and dislike of them, and I was fascinated by that. And once I started to get to know snakes, I realized everything that other people thought about them was wrong, and they were really a lot like any other animal.
So as a young kid, you were fascinated, you were interested in them. What was the first moment that you feel like you fell in love?
It was when a rough green snake crawled out from behind the toy box in my bedroom when I was about three.
Inside your bedroom?
Inside my bedroom. And I was just kind of blown away that this beautiful bright green snake was inside my own room. And I was fascinated by them ever since.
And it's taken you on a long journey to understand the many snakes of North Carolina. Give us an overview. So I said at the beginning, there are close to 40 different species. Tell me about the snakes of North Carolina.
There are about 38 species in the state, and it would take most of the day to tell you about all of them. But as you said before, there are probably 20 or more species in most parts of the state. Some places have more than that. There are six species that are potentially dangerous to humans because they're venomous, but the rest of them are all completely harmless. And the venomous snakes are harmless, too, as long as you leave them alone.
Well, so let's talk about these venomous snakes for a second. You said there are six different kinds, and there's an important distinction to be made between venom and poison. A lot of us say, oh, there's a poisonous snake in my backyard, but you say that terminology is actually kind of inaccurate. Tell me about that.
Right. Venoms are poisons in the broadest sense of the term, but a lot of herpetologists have a real pet peeve when someone says a snake is poisonous. Normally, venom has to be introduced into the body to cause harm, whereas a poison has to be ingested. So if it bites you and you get sick, it's venomous. If you bite it and you get sick, it's poisonous. People do eat snakes and they don't die. So in that sense of the word, snakes are not poisonous.
So you're telling me that I could actually drink a snake's venom and that may not harm me, but if a snake bites me, that's going to harm me.
Right. The venoms are just complex cocktails of proteins. And unless you have some kind of lesion in your mouth or esophagus or stomach, if that venom doesn't get into your bloodstream, your stomach acid is just going to break it down and digest it like any other protein.
Wow. So what is venom? Describe sort of what makes it up and why do snakes have it?
Well, they have it in order to get food. It evolved as a food-getting mechanism, and most animals that have venom use it to kill their prey easily and quickly so that their prey doesn't injure them. They can also use it secondarily for defense, but it's in snakes, it evolved as a food-getting mechanism, and it's secondarily a defensive mechanism, and venom glands evolved from salivary glands, and they use specialized teeth that are called fangs to deliver that venom.
And there's something about the properties of the venom that help the prey sort of become more easily digestible to the snake. Is that right?
In some snakes, yes. The ones that have hemotoxic venom breaks down tissue and red blood cells in particular. And it actually not only kills the prey, but starts the digestion process before the snake even swallows it. Neurotoxic venom, on the other hand, affects the central nervous system. It basically paralyzes and kills the prey really quickly. It doesn't do much in the way of digestion.
So the hemotoxic venom begins to break down the tissue, which is maybe why I was going to wait longer to bring this up. But my dog got bit by a copperhead a couple of years ago, and sort of immediately tissue in his paw began to die. So is that a result of
that's
hemotoxin.
The hemotoxin breaking the tissue down.
Interesting. Okay, so we understand the different properties of venom and how it's used. Why? How does this sort of factor into how a snake perceives the world? Tell me a little bit about sort of what the world looks like from them,
well,
from their perspective.
Snakes have sort of a different perception of the world than we do. They live more in a chemosensory perception of the world. They have a forked tongue and a Jacobson's organ in the roof of their mouth, and they pick up particles, chemical particles from their environment with their tongue and deliver it to those two little pits, the Jacobson's organ, and that sends messages to the brain, which sorts them out as to how they should react to those. That's their primary sense, is their tongue and their Jacobson's organ. They can also see, but they don't see as well as we do. They're pretty good at seeing motion, detecting motion, but not very good at making out shapes or objects at long distances. They're deaf to airborne sounds. They don't hear the same way we do, but they are very sensitive to vibrations. They can pick up vibrations through the substrate extremely well.
So this Jacobson's organ, how exactly is it perceiving signals from the environment, and what information is it giving the snake that's important?
Well, it's sort of like a combination between smell and taste, I suppose. A snake is essentially tasting its surroundings and picking up particles and deciding how to react to those chemical cues as something to feed on, something to mate with, something to be afraid of, or most of the things it would pick up would just be neutral.
So, okay, there are six different kinds of venomous snakes in North Carolina. What are some of the similarities and differences among them, would you say?
Well, five of the six are pit vipers. That includes the three rattlesnake species, the timber rattlesnake, the pygmy rattlesnake, and the eastern diamondback, and the copperhead and the cottonmouth. Those are all pit vipers. And they're called that because they have a heat sensory pit between their eye and their nostril on the front of their face, and that helps to detect very small changes in temperature. It helps them detect warm-blooded prey, things like mice that they eat. And the other species is the eastern coral snake, and that's an elapid, a member of the same family that cobras and mambas and crates are a member of, and it has a neurotoxic venom.
So some of them have neurotoxic, some of them have hemotoxic.
Yeah, the coral snake in North Carolina is the one that's neurotoxic. Some populations of the timber rattlesnake, or canebrake rattlesnake as it's called in the coastal plain, some of those coastal plain populations have some neurotoxins as well as hemotoxins in their venom.
So I want you to take me inside the mind of a snake for a second. And so I sort of, if me and a snake are together in my yard, I see them, I know how I'm going to react. What is going on in their head? What does a snake do when it senses that another being, potentially a human, is nearby?
It depends on the species of snake, and it depends on what that being does. If that being leaves it alone, it usually does nothing. If it happens to be asleep, it might not even know you're there. Usually most snakes, if you encounter them and they're coiled up somewhere where they want to be, they'll remain completely still and hope that you don't see them or bother them, if they even know you're there at all. If you do disturb them, the first thing they'll probably do is try to get away. If they don't have an outlet to get away, or you get right up in their face or try to pick them up and step on them, they might bite to defend themselves, depending on the species and the individual. Some snakes don't bite no matter what you do to them. And some individuals within a species have more of a tendency to bite than others. Just like people, they'll have a shorter fuse than others.
So it may be that we perceive snakes as aggressive, but actually they are just defending themselves.
Right. There's no such thing as an aggressive snake. The only aggressive animal I've ever encountered are humans. Anything that's called aggressive, it's almost always defending itself. It's defending itself, its family, its territory. If animals were aggressive, we'd be attacked by them as soon as we walked outside our house constantly. I guess you could say a predator might be aggressive. A shark that's trying to eat you, it's aggressively feeding on you. But a snake is not going to attack you to feed on you. It's going to bite you to defend itself. It's acting defensively, not aggressively.
And so you say it's important for us to understand that the snakes that may be living in our yard, for example, have probably been there for a long time. And there's an important reason why we should let them continue to live there. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, most people, if they see a snake in their yard, if they're afraid of snakes, they're going to freak out and wonder how it got there. But chances are it's been there its entire life, maybe in their neighborhood, and they've just never seen it before. Go back inside and watch TV for an hour or so, and you probably never see it again.
Why shouldn't we move them?
Well, because they're part of the world. They have home ranges, and most snakes know exactly where they are. If you move them, they're going to be lost, just like if you moved you or me out to California or somewhere. The first thing we do is try to get back home, and snakes are going to try to do that too. They're going to try to get back to something that's familiar. Most animals have territories that they're familiar with. If you feel like you have to move a snake, usually a short distance translocation, something less than 200 meters is probably what's recommended, so that it's away from your front doorstep, but it still knows where it is.
So you're not disorienting it too much.
Right.
Okay, I have tons more questions for you, and we're going to continue this conversation after the break. More on snakes, on the state of things, just ahead. Please stay with us. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I am Anita Rao. We are continuing our conversation now about snakes in North Carolina with herpetologist Jeff Bean. So before the break, we were talking about all of the different kinds of snakes, the kinds of snakes that have venom. I want to know now, how exactly do you study and track these species?
Well, there are a lot of ways to study snakes. At the Museum of Natural Sciences where I work, we maintain a large collection of preserved specimens. But we also study snakes in the wild, and there are a lot of ways to survey for snakes. I do a lot of radio telemetry with snakes. We implant transmitters in them and follow them around to determine how big their home ranges are and where they spend their time and things like that. And we also study, you know, where they occur in the state, what they eat, how big they get, any kind of natural history information. We keep records on those kinds of things.
So you implant a device into the snake, and it's able to transmit information to you about where the snake is going. Are you able to learn behavior that way, or how do you learn about snake behavior?
Yeah, you can learn about behavior that way. A lot of times when we radio track snakes, they'll be under the ground, so sometimes it's not very exciting to locate them. They're out of sight where we can't see them, and sometimes they'll be doing something like feeding or mating or digging a nest, you know, doing something interesting. Once in a while, we get to see that kind of behavior.
What's been one of the most striking things that you've learned from this kind of tracking?
I've learned that the species that I've been radio tracking for many years, including the northern pine snake, the eastern coot whip, and the southern hognose snake, they know exactly where they are. They have very well-defined home ranges, and they stay within those areas and visit the same sites over and over again. So They're familiar with their territory, just like you or I would be with our neighborhood.
So there are a lot of misunderstandings, misconceptions about snakes. What do you think are some of the biggest ones that you hear most often that you would like to try to dispel?
I think just that snakes are aggressive, that they're out to get people, that if you see a snake, it's going to attack you or bite you, and that, you know, that all of them are dangerous. And snakes really are not dangerous at all if you just leave them alone. Nobody's ever been bitten by a snake while they were leaving it alone. It's always when they step on it or pick it up or try to kill it or mess with it or otherwise. I think people like me who like snakes and are always looking for them, we're aware of them, so we wonder how in the world you get bitten by a snake. You know, and I guess people that aren't aware of them just are kind of the ones that are careless and step on one because they're not thinking about a snake being there. I'm always thinking that there might be a snake, so I'm looking for them.
Your eyes are always peeled.
Right.
Why do you think humans are so fearful of snakes?
I've been trying to understand that my entire life, and I really don't know where that comes from. It's phobias are not rational fears. Usually there's some basis for a phobia, but not always. There are snakes that are venomous and that can potentially hurt a person very badly if they bite you, but that doesn't mean they will bite you. You know, you have to do something to make them bite you first. And I think people are afraid of the unknown, and people for some reason aren't interested in snakes very well, so they don't know about them, so they don't bother to learn, and so once people become familiar with anything, they're not going to be afraid of it anymore.
Maybe the fear of something that we can't control. You know, we can put roach traps inside of our house and mouse traps inside of our house, but we can't control what happens in our front yard, and that's scary for humans who like to have a sense of control over their environment.
Well, you can control your front yard. You can pave it over completely and put a wall around
it.
That's true. You could move to a high rise. But yeah, if you live in a place that has any kind of woods or natural areas, you're going to have wildlife there, including snakes. And it's best to just become aware of them and become familiar with them. And then you won't be afraid of them anymore once you become familiar with them.
Well, tell me about why we should love them, why we should appreciate them. What do they do for the environment, and what do they do for humans?
Well, they do the same thing that any other plant or animal does. They're part of the system. They eat certain species and keep them from becoming too numerous, and they're eaten by other species. They cycle nutrients through the ecosystem in unique ways, just like anything else. Something's existence should not be justified by what it does for humans. You could just easily ask, what do humans do for snakes, or what do humans do for raccoons? Everything has a right to exist that's out there. But some of the things they do, it does happen that snakes do certain things for humans. They eat a lot of species that we don't like mice and rats, that can cause diseases and problems. And by eating a lot of rodents, ticks, snakes are swallowing a lot of ticks, and ticks cause things like Rocky Mountain spotted fever and Lyme disease. One study showed that snakes are significant tick destroyers in eastern forest sites. Their venoms are also being used for a lot of different kinds of research on various cancers and neurological diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. Venoms may be someday successfully used to treat those kinds of human ailments. And venom research is really just in its infancy, so we don't know what medical miracles may lie hidden in some of the venoms of these species.
Well, we have an endless number of questions that we still want to ask you, so we'll definitely have to have you back. Jeff Bean is a herpetologist and the collections manager for herpetology at the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
More just ahead.